Hello, it's time to read for the Des Moines Register. It's time to read the Des Moines Register for today, last day of April, April 30th, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Pat. My partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Scott. And for the first hour, we'll cover local and national news in the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinion, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. Today's weather, we're expecting clouds and sun today. Winds will be out of the south at 12 to 25 miles an hour. A strong thunderstorm is possible for tonight. We're looking for a high today of 82 and tonight 52. Tomorrow, shower and thunderstorms possible again, a high around 71, a low of 56. And Thursday, again, more rain, thunderstorms, highs in the 70s. Our normal high for this time of year is 67, so we'll be above that. Our normal low is 46. Our record high was set back in 1910 at 92 degrees, and our record low, 24 degrees in 1958. Sunrise today at 6:12 a.m., and it'll set tonight at 8:12 p.m. From the front page, our main section of Des Moines Register, our headlines are these. Schools lean on no on arming teachers. A story on Minden as they rode to recovery after a tornado hit there last week, and Hy-Vee and city leaders are close to an accord on the downtown store hours. From the Metro in Iowa section, if your home was hit, what to know about filing claims in the event of weather-related damage. Fired home health aide is denied benefits, and we have some pictures from prom in Perry. So that's a look at our weather and headlines. Now here's Scott with our first story.
Thank you, Pat. I'll start with schools lean no on arming teachers. DMPS, other districts forego state program. It's written by Samantha Hernandez of the Des Moines Register. Iowa's largest and most diverse school district has no plans to arm its staff despite passage of a new state law allowing that. Neither do most of the suburban school districts surrounding it. Des Moines Public Schools' decision to not to utilize the weeks-old state law is partially because the district already employs a public safety team, officials said. Des Moines Public Schools does not have an interest in allowing teachers and staff to be armed in our school buildings and has no plans to opt into a new program that allows for guns to be present in schools, said Phil Rader, the district's spokesperson. The renewed conversation around whether school district staff should be armed came to the forefront during the 2024 legislative session following a deadly shooting at Perry High School in early January. The gunman, a 17-year-old student, killed an 11-year-old student and a high school principal before killing himself. Iowa school officials already could arm staff under Iowa Code 724.4B, but districts hit barriers in the process. Spirit Lake and Cherokee school districts attempted to arm staff under the previous code but reversed course after insurance carrier EMC refused to cover the districts for the 2023-2024 school year if they proceeded. The Iowa Department of Education does not collect data on which school districts approve staff to carry firearms, said Heather Doe, the department's spokesperson. During the 2024 legislative session, Republican lawmakers introduced House File 2586, which allows school officials to arm staff and grant qualified immunity for those who are okayed to carry a weapon on school grounds. Lawmakers said they believe giving school staff qualified immunity would ease the insurance issue. Perry Community School District, which is still dealing with the aftermath of the shooting, has not considered whether to arm staff. The new law has not been discussed by the board, Board President Linda Andorf said. Around the Des Moines Metro, school officials are weighing next steps. An Iowa poll conducted in late February showed that 60% of Iowans support arming school staff, including teachers. More than 30 states allow schools to arm staff. Earlier this month, Governor Kim Reynolds signed House File 2586 into law. Des Moines School's decision not to arm staff comes at a time when officials are focusing on overall district security and cybersecurity. Security became a priority heading into the current 2023-2024 school year following deadly shootings at East High School in 2022 and Starts Right Here Alternative School in January 2023. The district was also closed for several days in early 2023 because of a ransomware attack. In response, the Des Moines School Board significantly increased what the district spends on overall security for the current 2023-2024 school budget. Some of the increased budget went to expanding the district's full-time public safety staff. We believe that the role of our teachers is to educate our students, and the role of the district is to keep our students, teachers, and staff safe, Des Moines School Board Chair Jackie Norris said. House File 2586 also requires larger schools to employ a school resource officer, but allows school boards to opt out. Des Moines school officials have no plans to bring back school resource officers. The district discontinued its school resource officer contract with Des Moines Police Department in 2021 following an audit that showed black students were more likely than their white peers to have an interaction with law enforcement at school. The district's safety plan involves a mix of measures, including campus monitors, targeted restorative justice approaches, which help staff handle issues as they arise, building improvements, and updated technology, Norris said. I think our teachers are our caregivers in the classroom, Norris said, and I think that is the role that they want to play and have signed up to play. And quite honestly, I haven't heard from a single teacher or community member that has asked us to equip our teachers with guns at this time. The Johnston School Board's three-member policy committee met Wednesday to discuss House File 2586. District Board Policy 502.6 currently prohibits weapons on school district property, said Lynn Meadows, Johnston Community School District spokesperson. The policy committee discussion focused on making edits to clarify board policy, she said. The proposed revisions suggest district officials will continue to prohibit weapons on school district property, Meadows said. A final decision is expected to be made by the Johnston School Board at its May 6th meeting. Waukee and Urbandale school districts are both planning to prohibit staff, other than law enforcement, from carrying firearms on school grounds. Both school boards are expected to take up the issue in May. On February 19th, the Urbandale School Board unanimously approved a resolution supporting greater education and awareness on the proper storage of firearms, School Board President Jason Menke said. Officials will need to update the student handbook to include information about adults' legal obligations regarding the secure storage of firearms and to provide parents with information about secure storage at student registration. I don't believe we'll have armed teachers in Urbandale in the near future, Menke said. Lane Buck, spokesperson for the West Des Moines Community School District, said, "We have not made any decisions regarding this decision, but the district does already have several school resource officers through the West Des Moines and Clive Police Departments who have been in place for several years." At Ankeny and Dallas Center Grimes School Districts, officials are still reviewing the law with legal teams and insurance companies. Ankeny officials are reviewing the language of the new law to determine the policy, funding, and operational implications, said Samantha Ox, Ankeny Community School District's spokesperson. Officials in the North Polk District have not decided on policy while awaiting further guidance from the district's attorneys. There is still a lot of ambiguity surrounding this matter, and we want to ensure we do our due diligence before deciding a path forward around such a sweeping change, North Polk spokesperson Hunter Fleschner said. Education officials and advocates said they appreciate that the new law gives school districts the opportunity to choose security measures that are right for their district. As a parent who sends their kid to school every day, I think I join with just about every other parent in this country that is worried about the safety of our children in a school building, Norris said. And it is an issue that should be at the forefront of every single school district, but it should be left up to the school district to address that issue in a way that best works for them. The Iowa State Education Association was among those who registered against the bill, said President Mike Baranek. We do not agree that it's appropriate to be arming our educators in our buildings when there are many other avenues which districts can utilize to ensure that our children are safe, Baranek said. It is incredibly important that local control is paramount in this bill. Pat?
Thank you, Scott. Other front page story from the Des Moines Register. The road to recovery, rebuilding Minden after an EF3 tornado, is expected to take years. Jose Mendiola of the Register wrote this article. When Larry Eller's wife, Diane, died last spring, he decided to keep intact the last puzzle she completed. For more than 13 months, the image depicting a snow-covered home sat in the couple's Minden basement just outside the bathroom that Larry Eller's hid in Friday when a tornado swept through the tiny western Iowa town. While the rest of his home was destroyed, the puzzle remained as it was, complete and untouched. Somebody asked me if I brought it in yesterday, and I said, no, Eller's 77 said. It was there when the tornado hit the house. It's one of those things that are hard to believe. Eller's home was one of the approximately 40% of homes in Minden that were damaged by the tornado on Friday, said Craig Carlson, public relations manager for Pottawatomie County. About 48 homes in the 600-person town are considered destroyed. Carlson said, this is ground zero, really. This town got crushed, but the spirit of these people has been phenomenal. He estimates it could take years to rebuild. The tornado that ripped through Minden, killing one person and injuring three others, was one of at least 20 that touched down across the state on Friday, according to an updated count from the National Weather Service. Officials believe the tornado in Minden was a very strong EF3, which can have wind speeds of up to 165 miles per hour, according to a preliminary report. Evidence shows that it started about 3 miles east of McClelland and intensified, widening to approximately 800 yards as it impacted the town of Minden. The National Weather Service believes the storm itself produced several vortexes, with evidence indicating some areas in Minden sustained damage from an EF1 tornado just 100 yards from where the higher wind speed struck. The tornado continued northeast for about 45 miles, throwing at least one home off the foundation, overturning a semi before narrowly missing the town of Defiance. At one point, the tornado was estimated to be a mile wide, according to the National Weather Service. Damage from other tornadoes was reported in multiple counties, from Crawford to Union and Ringgold, up to Polk and Jasper counties. At least six were rated EF2, including the one that struck Pleasant Hill in the Des Moines Metro. Damage is still being evaluated, and the National Weather Service's additional tornado tracks and ratings will be added in coming days. Minden remained closed off to the general public and media as of Monday afternoon due to extensive debris and the use of heavy equipment to clear it. What's left of Eller's home, the roof blown off and glass and drywall scattered everywhere, was close enough to the edge of town for the Des Moines Register to see. Eller's, a great-grandfather, worked with his family Monday to clear what was left of what he called his dream home. Crouching down to pick up the debris with heavy-duty work gloves, he recalled how he just missed serious injury from the tornado. He was standing outside in his driveway when it formed at about 6 p.m. Friday. Eller said, I was looking southwest and I could see two funnel clouds. When it came down, it was one big tornado. I ran down through the house as fast as a 77-year-old man could run and just got into the basement, down into the bathroom. A cold breeze blew through the broken windows Monday as he walked down to the bathroom, which today is covered in bits of window glass where he hid from the storm. Eller said, I came running down those steps and went into this bathroom, and I couldn't get the door to shut because there was so much pressure in this house. I was hunkered against the wall, and the wall was shaking. I was thinking, this is it. I'm gone. He battled the tornado for about 30 seconds. Eller's found that his sweatshirt pockets were filled with broken glass that the tornado blew in while he was running for safety. Although his home is destroyed, Ellers looks to the future back in his home where he'll keep the words painted on an interior wall still visible today. Every day holds the possibility of a miracle. The guy who built my house in 2010 came by my house this morning and said, "We'll put her up again," Ellers said. Because of the damage, officials are asking that volunteers and organizations not come to the area yet, according to a Pottawatomie County news release. Cleanup efforts and securing infrastructure began during the weekend, and as needs arise and safety conditions improve, officials will announce volunteer opportunities. The American Red Cross had set up two shelters in the county, but they weren't needed because many of the displaced residents were able to arrange overnight accommodations, Carlson said. He added, "We have a lot of community support and a lot of agencies have reached out. We're fortunate that food, water, and shelter have been in good order right now." The three Pottawatomie County residents who were injured have been treated and released. Three more have suffered minor injuries during cleanup and recovery, including one first responder and two community members. The identity of the person who died has not yet been released. Those who are interested in helping can donate at the Community Foundation for Western Iowa's website, which is givewesterniowa.org. Scott?
Thank you, Pat. Our final story from the front page of the Des Moines Register today: Hy-Vee city leaders close to accord on downtown store hours. This is written by Philip Jones of the Des Moines Register. Hy-Vee and Des Moines could be close to reaching a resolution after the supermarket chain, violating the terms of a 2015 development agreement, reduced the hours of the Court Avenue store, the only supermarket serving downtown Des Moines' growing population. Hy-Vee, on February 5th, abruptly cut the store hours by a third to 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. The move came without advance notice to the city government or public, despite the development agreement's stipulations. Amid an ensuing uproar, the store's hours changed again a short time later, and again without announcement, to 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Those hours, now officially posted on the store's doors and website, have remained in place while city and Hy-Vee officials engaged in talks. Discussions between the West Des Moines-based company and the city officials continue, city spokesperson Deb McClung said Friday, but a resolution could be reached in time for the city council to consider it at its May 6th meeting, said Ward 3 council member Josh Mandelbaum, whose district includes downtown. Hy-Vee spokesperson Tina Potthoff confirmed that the city and company were close to reaching an agreement, but said it is still being finalized before being presented to the council. "We've been meeting with the city for the past several weeks," Potthoff said. "A resolution will be announced in the next several weeks." According to a person with knowledge of the discussions, the hours could be similar to the current ones. The store opened in 2017 with hours of 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. That was even longer than the 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. required by the development agreement, which gave an LLC owned by Hy-Vee and West Des Moines developer Knapp Properties the city-owned land at a large discount so long as the multi-use building Knapp planned to build there included the supermarket. During the pandemic shutdowns in 2020, when retailers of all sorts were struggling, Hy-Vee dropped the hours with city permission to 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., the schedule it maintained before February's change. Construction of the store fulfilled a four-decade-long goal of the city, which wanted a grocery store to serve residents in the city's core. From 2010 to 2020, downtown's population grew by 82% to 8,371, the U.S. Census showed. Mandelbaum said in March that it's much higher now. February's big cut in hours left residents wondering if Hy-Vee, the Des Moines Metro's largest employer, was on the way to closing the store. Analysts and residents speculated that the location is not profitable or as profitable as Hy-Vee would like. Downtown Neighborhood Association President Brandon Brown described it as a possible loss leader for the chain. "It definitely, to me, telegraphs volatility," Brown said. Potthoff declined to comment on the store's profitability. She said that declining foot traffic since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, and increasing theft and disruptive behavior in the store made the changes necessary. Whatever the reason, 2024 has so far been a rough patch for the Central Business District's limited retail sector. In February, Walgreens, which operated downtown locations for more than a century, closed its store at 666 Walnut Street. The following month, Come & Go closed the experimental walk-up store at 319 7th Street that it had opened in 2020. The closures come as major employers, especially Wells Fargo and Nationwide Mutual Insurance, have reduced their downtown office space. The operators of the Financial Center and 2 Rouen Center both have announced in recent months they are converting part or all of the downtown office towers to residential use. Aaron Hyde and Justin Lossner, retail industry analysts with JLL Brokerage at 801 Grand Avenue, said Hy-Vee is trying to navigate changes to foot traffic as downtown enters a transition after the pandemic. Hyde said he doubted the store will close anytime soon. Sometimes things get taken apart and put back together, Hyde said. I think Hy-Vee came in to show their commitment to this town, so I think they're committed. The quest for a major downtown grocery store began in the mid to late 1980s as residents began moving to new apartments downtown. Nightlife sprang up in the East Village, on Court Avenue, and elsewhere downtown, helping the city shed its nickname, Dead Moines. You should be able to live downtown, work downtown, and play downtown, and not have to get into a vehicle to do anything else, Brown said. But in order to do that, you need to have access to food. Various grocery store ventures came and went until 2014, Knapp Properties and Hy-Vee surprised city leaders by proposing to build an 81-unit apartment building with a ground-floor supermarket on a city-owned parking lot at 420 Court Avenue. At 36,000 square feet, the planned store was smaller than Hy-Vee's suburban locations, though larger than most competitor Fairway's newer stores, which tend to be about 24,000 feet. The development agreement between Hy-Vee, Knapp Properties, and the city took effect in 2017. 420 Court Avenue LLC, formed by Hy-Vee and Knapp Properties in 2015 when the agreement was finalized, owns the building according to the agreement and the Polk County Assessor's Office. The companies acquired the land from the city for $3.57 million, with a rebate of $3.3 million paid by the city over 10 years if they meet certain requirements in the agreement. Then, in years 10 through 15, beginning in the year 2027, the companies will receive a portion of the new property tax revenues the building generates. Potoff said she understands the store is critical to residents and that Hy-Vee remains committed to the store. We want to provide service to the downtown community, Potoff said. Phil Lempert, a Santa Monica, California-based grocery analyst who toured the store in 2017 with then Hy-Vee CEO Randy Ettinger, said that when it opened, it appeared as though it would be successful given the high number of office workers and the growing residential population in the area. But with the finance industry in downtown Des Moines contracting and more people working from home, the store needs to evolve, Lempert said. That means cutting hours. It means closing stores. It means going where the people want you to be in order to buy their food, Lempert said. It's a sheer numbers game. You've got to have enough people going into a store to make it profitable to turn over the merchandise and, frankly, to get the employees excited. But even with the growing population, Orchestrate Hospitality President Paul Rottenberg, whose restaurant group operates Sherman Hills Gateway Market, said he never thought there were enough residents in that area to support the store. I think that was a mistake, Rottenberg said, adding the plan was not well thought out. The downtown market wasn't at a point yet where you could be predominantly a pedestrian grocery store of that size, he said, adding that he believes the city was too far ahead of our skis. Andy Massath, a co-owner of a restaurant chain Full Court Press, said residents want a downtown grocery, but he doesn't believe enough will shop there consistently enough to support one. The group's holdings include downtown Staples L Bait Shop, Fong's Pizza, and the Royal Mile Pub. Massoth ran full court press's attempt at a downtown grocery store, Riverbend Trading Company at 208 Court Avenue, from its July 2007 opening to its January 2008 closing. They want it, but they're not going to support it enough to make it stick, he said of downtown residents. Hy-Vee has long experimented at its Des Moines metro area stores before rolling concepts out to other areas. In the early 2000s, the chain sold men's dress clothes at two West Des Moines stores before quickly scuttling the project when it failed to catch on. The Court Avenue store was a similar experience, Hy-Vee's first urban concept. It has offered not just an array of grocery items, but fresh food and ready-to-eat meals, as well as a sit-down market grill restaurant with a full bar, now operated under the Wahlburger brand. There's nothing traditional about it. You're not going to walk in and say, grocery store, Etiker said as the store opened. This is about food and about the lifestyle of today. But even as the ideas pioneered in the downtown store became major elements of a new generation of Hy-Vee superstores, such as those seen locally at the Grimes store that opened in 2021, the company showed signs it was having second thoughts about the Court Avenue location. The same year, it announced plans to turn the store into a standalone high chai restaurant and a health market selling supplements and organic produce. Residents and city officials wondered if the conversation would change the store's identity, the conversion would change the store's identity from the full-service grocery store required by the development agreement. The changes were never made, and last year Hy-Vee said they were on hold. Even if the store is not profitable, it gives Hy-Vee a place to experiment, Limpert said. I think there are a lot of learnings there that have been brought into other Hy-Vee stores in the suburbs, and that's okay, Limpert said. There's always value in having a store with a population that's younger, that's more vibrant, where you can experiment with things and test things and being able to bring it into other stores. With the February change in hours, Des Moines could have invoked a clause in the development agreement that would have given Hy-Vee 45 days to cure or remedy such default or face a lawsuit for breach of contract. Instead, Mandelbaum, in interviews in March and April, stressed that the city wants the store to be successful, though he cautioned that whatever proposal comes to the council must include hours that allow people to get there after work and include product offerings that you would expect in a full-service grocery store. He stressed that maintaining the store is essential to downtown's continued residential growth. Downtown is not just a business district. It's not just a cultural center, Mandelbaum said. It's also a neighborhood. That means that you need the full range of amenities that people expect in a neighborhood. That includes retail options. That includes being able to get many of the things you need for daily living. Residents will be sure to weigh in on whatever adjusted operating hours are proposed, Brown said. If something happens that the residents don't like, they're going to hear about it, he said. This is a pretty large voting population, and it impacts a lot of different members of the council. Pat?
Thank you, Scott. We have some other storm-related stories from the main section of the Register, so we'll read those now. Zach Bryan went to Nebraska to help Twister victims. Paris Barraza of the Register wrote this article. Country singer Zach Bryan was seen aiding cleanup efforts in Elkhorn, Nebraska, after tornadoes and severe storms battered parts of Nebraska and Iowa on Friday. KETV first reported the songwriter was seen among other volunteers in a community just outside Omaha. Omaha is about a 30-mile drive from Minden, the Pottawatomie County town, where a tornado touched down, killing one and causing damage to 180 homes. This came just after Bryan was in Des Moines performing at the Wells Fargo Arena for two nights on April 25th and 26th as part of the Quitting Time Tour. During Bryan's first concert, he dedicated a song to Caitlin Clark and thanked the audience for helping make his dreams come true. That Friday, tornado warnings were issued during his concert, and a tornado hit nearby Pleasant Hill. The Iowa Event Center said it followed established weather protocols and closed the Wells Fargo Arena concourse during the warning. The Grammy winner shared on his Instagram an image of debris and tagged his location to Omaha 2 days ago. Brian wrote on social media, "As an American and someone who lived in Omaha for some pretty formidable years of my life, I want to offer some honest prayers and hopes to the communities affected by the tornadoes that tore through them." He wrote that he and his band were standing with the community ahead of their two shows at the CHI Health Center Arena on April 29th and 30th. His post said, "I am so sorry to anyone that is having to deal with picking up the pieces of their homes and their lives. Without taking credit from the thousands of people lending a hand who have roots here, we love you so much and will do all we can to help." The Something in Orange singer is from Olliga, Oklahoma, according to his website. That town is located in the northeast portion of the state and is about 30 miles from Tulsa. "How can I help Minden? Well, you won't be able to be on the ground to help in the way Brian did in Elkhorn. Officials have asked that volunteers and organizations not go to the Minden disaster area and will announce when volunteer opportunities when the need arises," according to a Sunday 28 news release from Pottawatomie County. Information on how to donate to Minden will be announced in the coming days, and you can make donations to the Southwest Iowa Emergency Relief Fund to help places in the region, according to a news release. Then the National Weather Service is compiling additional tornado tracks and ratings from Friday. Victoria Rainette Rodriguez of the Register wrote this article. "Most of Iowa experienced severe weather this past week, including tornadoes. Tornadoes have been confirmed across western into central Iowa, and more are still under investigation. Preliminary reports show there were at least 20 tornadoes in Iowa, a number that's likely to increase. Damage was reported in multiple counties from Crawford to Union and Ringgold up to and around Polk and Jasper counties, according to the National Weather Service in Des Moines. Damage is still being evaluated, and the National Weather Service says that additional tornado tracks and ratings will be added in coming days. The National Weather Service office in Omaha, which covers western Iowa, was still working on damage assessments as of 4 p.m. Monday afternoon, but it was able to share preliminary information about a tornado in Minden that damaged 120 homes in the town of 600 people. And here's what we know about 10 of the tornadoes that have been confirmed so far. The tornado that hit Minden was likely a very strong EF3 that traveled 45 miles. Officials with the National Weather Service in Omaha are still working on damage surveys and determining the storm's exact path, but they believe a tornado that hit Minden was a very strong EF3. Evidence shows that the tornado touched down around 5:25 p.m. Friday, about 3 miles east of McClelland, and intensified as it moved toward Minden. The National Weather Service believes the storm itself produced several vortexes, with evidence indicating some areas in Minden sustained damage consistent with an EF1 tornado not far from where higher wind speeds struck. The tornado continued northeast for about 45 miles, throwing at least one home off the foundation and overturning a semi before narrowly missing the town of Defiance. At one point, the tornado was estimated to be a mile wide, according to National Weather Service. There were 3 injuries and 1 fatality reported. EF2 tornadoes confirmed in Union County near Creston. An EF2 tornado touched down in Creston on Friday at about 6:52 p.m. It tracked 6.82 miles and lasted until 7:08 p.m. Peak winds were at 125 miles per hour. EF2 tornadoes stuck on both sides of Afton. I think it means struck on both sides of Afton. Storms west of Afton produced an EF2 tornado on Friday with peak winds of 125 miles per hour. The storm had a path at 11.69 miles long and began around 7:53 p.m., ending at 8:15 p.m. A second EF2 tornado touched down east of Afton at 7:26 p.m. on Friday, ending at 7:44 p.m. That storm had a path length of nearly 11 miles and peak winds of 130 miles per hour. EF1 tornado near Mount Air left path of more than 25 miles in Ringgold County. Mount Air recorded the first touchdown in Ringgold County at 7:27 p.m. The tornado lasted until 8:08 p.m. with a path of 26.6 miles. Peak winds were at 110 miles per hour, and the storm had a rating of EF1. An EF2 tornado in Tingley came without warning, residents say. A second tornado in Ringgold County hit Tingley at about 8:19 p.m. on Friday and lasted until 8:36 p.m. It had a rating of EF2, lasting 10.25 miles with peak winds of 125 miles per hour. The southwest Iowa town is expected to be without power for 2 to 3 days. Some Tingley residents told the Register that there were no sirens or warnings before the tornado. The tornado was confirmed near Maffitt Reservoir. At 8:23 p.m. on Friday, a tornado touched down at the Maffitt Reservoir, lasting until 8:26 p.m. The tornado left a 1.7-mile path and had an EFO rating and peak winds of 80 miles per hour. Clark County tornado was rated an EF2. At 8:30 on Friday, a tornado touched down in Osceola, lasting until about 8:42 p.m. The storm had an EF2 rating and path 6.8 miles with peak winds of 135 miles per hour. And an EF1 tornado hit Jasper County near Monroe. A tornado in Monroe touched down around 9:42 p.m. Friday and lasted until 9:46 p.m. with peak winds of 105 miles per hour and a path just over 2 miles. It was rated an EF1. And finally, the tornado that hit Pleasant Hill was rated an EF2. The only confirmed tornado so far in Polk County was in Pleasant Hill. A tornado touched down in the Des Moines suburb on Friday at about 8:50 p.m., lasting until 9:02 p.m. The tornado's path was 7.44 miles with peak winds of 125 miles per hour and a rating at EF2. The tornado injured at least one resident and damaged nearly 20 homes. Residents and volunteers spent most of the weekend cleaning debris and assessing damage. Scott?
A couple more short stories related to the storms over the weekend. Parking ban in force for several Pleasant Hill streets after tornado. This is written by Chris Higgins. Pleasant Hill has placed a temporary parking ban on several streets as crews work to remove debris in the roadway from last week's EF2 tornado. Those with vehicles parked on the roads are asked to move them. The parking ban will allow crews to work more efficiently as they remove debris, according to a Pleasant Hill Police Department Facebook post. Police also ask people who may be curious to see the area, generally west of South Hickory Boulevard and south of Oakwood Drive to Four Mile Creek, to stay away to avoid congestion. The parking ban will last until 5 p.m. May 1st, according to a news release. No parking is allowed on East Oakwood Drive between South Pleasant Hill Boulevard and Scott Avenue, South Pleasant Hill Boulevard between East Oakwood Drive and Park Ridge Avenue, Kimberly Lane, D Drive, Parkview Drive, Schaefer Boulevard, Linden Boulevard, Pine Valley Drive west of South Hickory Boulevard, Catalpa Drive, Cypress Drive west of South Hickory Boulevard, Birch Boulevard, Orchard Drive west of South Hickory Boulevard, Beach Boulevard. Police also ask people to avoid Oakwood Cemetery, Pleasant Hill Elementary School, and Doan's Park. Residents who need or would like to offer assistance can call 211 for more information. And Polk County picking up some tornado storm debris free of charge. This is written by Victoria Reyna Rodriguez. Polk County Public Works planned to begin collecting storm debris on Monday for those impacted by last week's tornadoes and severe storms. In a news release, the Polk County Board of Supervisors asked for patience while crews worked to collect debris, particularly in Pleasant Hill, where an EF2 tornado struck Friday night. If you're a resident of Polk County, your tree and vegetation debris will be picked up eventually if you leave it outside on your curb. But there are some important specifications to follow. Debris should be placed between the curb and sidewalk parallel to the street. Debris should be cut to 6 feet in length. Tree and vegetation debris should be separated from any other types of debris. For other types of debris, Polk County recommends working with your insurance provider. The county also recommends documenting everything, taking plenty of pictures, and calling 211 if you need assistance. Now let's jump over to the Metro and Iowa section. And we've got an article entitled Home Hit, What to Know About Filing Claims. Many owners find they didn't have enough coverage. This is written by Lee Rude of the Des Moines Register. Insurance agents have a responsibility to make sure homes and other structures are insured for the right amount, and they are supposed to check the coverage annually. But many Iowa homeowners have found out too late after tornadoes like last weekend's or other severe storms, they didn't have enough coverage. Attorneys who have filed lawsuits for clients against insurance companies following disasters in Iowa warn that after-the-fact complaints to the state may not do much good. So it's always smart to review your homeowner's policy annually to determine if it needs to be updated. If your home was damaged in the storms, there's advice from the Iowa Insurance Division's Post-Disaster Claims Guide. Before reporting damage, find out what your deductible is. If the damage is minor, you might decide you're better off paying for the repairs out of pocket instead of filing an insurance claim. But remember that you might not be able to see all the damage. You may want to have a contractor inspect your home. If you believe the damage will cost more than your deductible to repair, or there's a lot of damage, you may want to file a claim. It's important to notify your insurance company as soon as you know there's damage and you decide to file a claim. The easiest way to report damage is to call your insurance company or agent directly. When filing a claim, be sure to get the name and phone number for every person you talk to. Record your claim or reference number. Ask questions about your coverage, including what it includes, whether there are separate deductibles for hail, tornado, or wind damage, and whether hotel costs are covered if you are displaced. Ask if there are any special processes or procedures you need to know about, when you can expect an adjuster to call, and what other information the company will need to process the claim. What other steps should I take? Compile a list of all damaged or destroyed personal property, a home inventory list, and receipts if you have them showing when you bought the damaged or destroyed items. You'll need this list when you meet with the adjuster. If your home is severely damaged, do your best to secure it and personal belongings. Gather important papers, including insurance policies. Take those with you if you can't stay in your home. If you can't stay in your home, save any hotel receipts. Contact your doctor's office, pharmacy, or health insurance provider if your prescription medicines were lost or if you lost your glasses, contacts, hearing aids, walker, wheelchair, or other medical equipment in the disaster. Make sure you notify utilities and your mortgage company and make arrangements for mail deliveries. What should I expect my homeowner's insurance to cover? Most homeowners' policies will pay the additional expenses you have if you can't stay in your home because of damage from a covered disaster. For example, if you move into a hotel or apartment while your home is repaired or rebuilt, the insurance company will pay your costs for temporary housing. Just don't expect the insurance company to pay for your stay at a five-star resort. If you don't hear from an adjuster in a reasonable amount of time, contact your agent or the company. A reasonable amount of time could be 3 to 5 days for a minor claim. Be sure they know how to contact you. How do I make sure I'm getting all that I'm entitled to? Remember, your insurance settlement won't necessarily be the same as your neighbor's. Your coverages, deductible, and policy limits may be different even if the damage looks the same. If the insurance company denies any part of the claim, ask for the denial in writing. Keep all paperwork. If you don't believe the offer is fair, call the insurance company. Be prepared to explain why you think the offer is unfair. If you're not satisfied with the response, contact the insurance division. Differences in construction estimates are common. Ideally, you and the insurance company should reach agreement on the scope of a loss. This is a detailed list of the quantities of construction materials, labor, profit, and overhead, building code compliance, and every single item required to repair or rebuild your home. Once you've submitted all the information that your insurance company needs, including written estimates from contractors, the adjuster will calculate the total cost. Insurance carriers don't typically send one big check to resolve claim after major damage. Most consumers find it takes at least 18 to 24 months to repair or rebuild a home and replace their possessions. The claim stays open until the insurer has made all the payments the homeowner is entitled to under the policy. How can I appeal my settlement? Iowans who are having difficulty with their insurance carrier may file a complaint with the Iowa Insurance Division, but beware, in Iowa, it's difficult for homeowners to win in disputes with their insurance companies unless they have legal representation. Homeowners have two main ways to resolve disputes: submitting to a neutral appraiser panel or filing a lawsuit. Often, lawyers file lawsuits in disputes to preserve homeowners' still unpaid claims because most policies in Iowa carry a one-year deadline for legal action after the date of a loss. How can I keep myself from being taken advantage of? After storms and other disasters, fraudsters, scam artists, and gougers often arrive quickly. This is when we need to lean on each other more than ever, neighbor to neighbor, and keep an eye out for those who seek to take advantage of Iowans' hardships, Attorney General Brenna Byrd said in a prepared statement Monday. Iowans are resilient, but they should not need to fight off scammers while rebuilding their lives. Here are a few tips to help you avoid becoming a victim of a disaster, fraudster, or scam artist. If you're working with contractors you don't know, find out where they're from. Many fraudsters will travel from state to state. Before you sign any contracts or pay any money, ask for references. Beware of those who are aggressive in their sales tactics, urging you to act immediately. Request a contractor's driver's license and take pictures of their vehicles, license plates, and get a written contract. But never sign a contract that allows the contractor to exclusively decide on final price, scope of work, or materials. Never pay the full amount before the work is complete, and never pay by bank, wire transfer, gift card, cryptocurrency, or cash. Ask your local Better Business Bureau and the State Attorney General's office about complaints against contractors you may be considering hiring. Also, check online. In most situations, you have 3 business days to cancel a home repair contract after signing it. Most importantly, report any suspected fraud to your insurance agent and the State Insurance Division as soon as possible. And if you are suspicious of a storm chaser scam or price gouging, contact the Iowa Attorney General's office at 888-777-4590 or file a complaint online at https://www.iowaattorneygeneral.gov/4-consumers/file-a-consumer-complaint. On price gouging, state law defines it as occurring when an Iowan is charged excessive prices for essential goods or services following a disaster. Whether a price is excessive is generally based on pre-disaster prices. The law recognizes a reasonable pricing structure for the recovery period that may allow some increase in prices. Governor Kim Reynolds has issued 2 disaster proclamations in recent weeks related to the severe weather that triggered state regulations prohibiting price gouging in the affected counties: Allamakee, Cass, Des Moines, Fayette, Henry, Lee, and Pottawatomie. During the period of the proclamation and up to an additional 6 months, items regulated under the anti-gouging protections include, but are not limited to, water, food, medicines, sanitation, supplies, utilities, and building materials. To report suspected price gouging, visit iowaattorneygeneral.gov and search for price gouging to access an online or printable complaint form. Pat?
Thank you, Scott. And one more storm-related story. And this is officials asking if volunteers don't deploy to Minden area and other ways that you can help. We've read about the Minden area in terms of they don't want volunteers there yet. But here's how you can help. The various cities that have been affected by tornadoes. First, in Minden, monetary donations are encouraged for those who wish to donate to help people affected in Minden. And that allows the residents there to purchase what they need, according to a news release. How to make Minden-specific donations will be announced in the coming days. Currently, people can make donations to the Southwest Iowa Emergency Relief Fund, and that's at givewesterniowa.org, and that'll support areas impacted in that region. Helping Pleasant Hill, the Pleasant Hill tornado, classified as an EF2, lasted roughly 12 minutes and caused one injury and damage to nearly 20 homes. The city is not asking for physical donations, according to a news release on April 27th. Financial donations can be made through the Disaster Recovery Fund, which the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines has activated following the severe storms and tornado that affected Pleasant Hill. Grants are awarded to community-based organizations and service providers responding to a disaster, and grants are made to meet the needs not already being addressed by existing resources and programs, and that's according to the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines. Pleasant Hill's Facebook page encourages people needing assistance or wanting to offer assistance to dial 211. At Casey stores, shoppers can round up their purchases at Casey stores in Iowa, Nebraska, and Oklahoma as part of a campaign supporting the American Red Cross through May 10th. That's according to Katie Petru, a spokesperson for the convenience store chain. Searching to help on GoFundMe, you can visit the Midwest Tornado Relief Hub on GoFundMe, the crowdfunding platform to search for fundraisers you can donate to by state. This centralized hub will be updated with fundraisers as they're verified by GoFundMe's trust and safety team, and that's according to Alex White, a spokesperson with the company. There are several fundraisers for Iowans impacted by the April 26 tornadoes posted on the GoFundMe website. And here are tips to avoid scams after disasters. People impacted by natural disasters, such as the tornado, should be aware of fraudulent contractors that take advantage of people in need of repairs. The Iowa Attorney General's office says to always work with an established, reputable local contractor. Legitimate contractors rarely solicit through door-to-door, so be skeptical about who shows up at your home. Avoid paying large sums of money to a contractor in advance. If you have to make a partial advance payment for materials, make your payment out to the supplier and the contractor and insist on a mechanic's lien waiver in case the contractor fails to pay others. People should also watch for scammers posing as officials with government disaster assistance agencies, according to the Federal Trade Commission. You can spot an imposter because they'll demand money. But scams are limited to those impacted by a natural disaster. People wanting to help those impacted by a natural disaster should be aware of scammers seeking donations for disaster relief. Donate to trusted, well-known charities and verify its legitimacy through its official website, as scammers may create fake charities during natural disasters, and that's according to the Federal Trade Commission. Scott?
Thank you, Pat. Our final story from the Metro and Iowa section. Fired home health aide is denied benefits. Unemployment claim rejected by judge. Written by Clark Kaufman of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. A home health worker accused of falsifying records and taking hundreds of dollars from a client is not entitled to unemployment benefits, an Iowa judge has ruled. According to state records, Tara Frank was employed by the long-term company ABCM Corporation as a home health personal care assistant from January 2022 until February 2024 when she was fired. Her termination came after an elderly client complained about being billed for services that were never rendered by Frank and about Frank's failure to repay money she'd been loaned. The client claimed she had loaned Frank small amounts of money that totaled $400 to $500 and that Frank had only repaid $20. Crystal Thoe, the administrator at ABCM's Oakwood Care Center, which employed Frank, spoke to the client, who asserted that when Frank came to her home, she would spend much of her time on the couch chatting rather than performing any of the assigned housekeeping and personal care duties. According to ABCM, Thoe then questioned Frank, who reportedly admitted that she had been falsely documenting housekeeping services that were never performed. Frank also was alleged to have admitted borrowing money from the client in violation of the company's policies on abuse and financial exploitation. Frank was fired and subsequently sought unemployment benefits, which led to a hearing before Administrative Law Judge James Timberland. At the hearing, Frank admitted falsely documenting services never performed, but said she later returned to the client's home to do the work in her free time. She also acknowledged a year-long pattern of irregular financial transactions involving the client's funds, but said that what the client described as loans were actually repayments for Frank fronting the costs of the client's expenses. These examples offered by Ms. Frank do not account for the many check-cashing incidents Ms. Frank admits occurred, all of which she failed to report to the employer, Timberland ruled after the hearing. At minimum, the evidence establishes a pattern of intentionally false documentation of services performed for the client. That conduct exposed the employer to potential legal sanction and reputational harm. Timberland denied Frank unemployment benefits, finding she had committed workplace misconduct. Other unemployment decisions. Other Iowans whose unemployment cases were recently decided include Terry A. Niemeyer, who worked as a nurse for Waterloo's Cedar Valley Hospice from May 2023 until she was fired in December. The company alleged that on December 16th, Niemeyer visited with a patient who was dying and while there complained about his job and how long it had taken him to drive to the patient's home. The patient later asked Cedar Valley not to send Niemeyer back under any circumstances. A month before, a different patient's daughter had allegedly called Cedar Valley to complain that Niemeyer had made crude jokes, said things that shouldn't have been said in the presence of a lady, and had unzipped the female patient's sweatshirt, exposing the woman in front of her family, while stating that he hoped he didn't have to deal with any more patients that day. On another occasion, Niemeyer allegedly electronically copied word for word another care provider's set of notes and pasted them into a patient's official medical record rather than conduct and document his own assessment of the patient. A judge denied Niemeyer's subsequent request for unemployment benefits, finding he had committed workplace misconduct. Niemeyer's license is in good standing with the Iowa Board of Nursing. Dustin Allen, who was employed by the city of Dubuque as a full-time police officer from late 2023 through early February 2024 when he resigned. On February 7, 2024, Allen sent a letter to city officials indicating he had concluded police work was not a good fit for him, stating, "I only recently realized that I hate to give someone a ticket, that someone to jail, take someone to jail, or even just show up to a call to sort out someone's problems." On February 9, 2024, Allen submitted his letter of resignation, effective immediately. He later collected $1,878 in unemployment benefits. Earlier this month, a judge ruled Allen was ineligible for unemployment given his voluntary resignation and ordered Allen to repay the benefits already collected.
Okay, thank you, Scott. We'll go back then to the main part of the paper, the Des Moines Register, and the new poll shows Trump leading Biden by 6 points. Former President Donald Trump leads President Joe Biden by 6 percentage points in a new national poll from CNN, with nearly half of the voters saying they are planning to place their support behind Trump this fall. 49% of those polled say they are expecting to vote for Trump in the 2024 election, compared to Biden's 43%, according to a survey released Sunday. Trump's support remains basically unmoved from CNN's last poll in January, while Biden has dropped 2 percentage points, down from 45%. Biden does not fare much better in a five-way matchup between himself, Trump, Green Party candidate Jill Stein, and independent candidates Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Cornel West. In that scenario, Biden garnered just 33% of the vote, while Trump held 42%. Kennedy polled at 16%, siphoning the vote away from Trump and Biden. West polled at 4% and Stein at 3%. Even as Trump faces four sets of unprecedented criminal charges, his favor among some Americans has continued to rise. 55% of voters say they now view Trump's first term as a success, while 44% see it as a failure. Americans' tendency to look back at past presidencies with rose-colored glasses is common. Still, the overall opinion of Trump's presidency has markedly increased since he left office. A January 2021 poll taken days after the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol showed that 55% of voters considered Trump's presidency a failure.